Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
With Danny, I'm Grant. This is The Fan. We are brought to you today and every day by the law firm Condorian Murad.
They can do a lot for you. Estate planning, elder law, real estate transaction, probate administration. Their attorneys are always there to protect you and your family's assets. Schedule a free consultation with their team today by visiting kmlawyers.com and be sure to let them know that we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com.
So Joe Witt is your defensive coordinator of the Washington Commanders, and he spoke today to the media. He addresses the media once a week. So a lot of the time what happens is you spend half of the presser looking back, in this case at the Falcons fiasco, and then half of the presser looking forward, in this case to the collision with the Chargers, right? There were a few things that I pulled out of this press conference that I wanted to talk about. The first is apparently Frankie Louvu, who has played two straight really good games, was the only player who played well in this game, according to the defensive coordinator. This was a heck of a comment. I mean, to go out of your way to single out a player and to literally say nobody else played at his level means that a lot of guys did not play the way Joe Witt wanted them to play. This was Witt on Louvu, who, after two quiet weeks, has been much better the last couple of games.
Frankie played really well. He's the one guy that played well in this game.
Right. As a pass rusher, is there more you can do? Because the rush has not been as many. If so, why? And what can you do more?
His rush has not been as many.
The numbers, according to the numbers, I don't know. You would know better.
Yeah, the numbers are there. He's rushed more than any off the ball linebacker in the league. So,
is there anything you can do to? What more can you do to maybe help in that area, or are they doing different things against him in that?
What they're doing, different things against him, and that's why Bobby's getting the success that he's getting, and DA's getting some. So they're, like I said, they're focusing more on him and. That's good. You know what I'm saying? His time's going to come. His sacks are going to come when they start putting attention on other players. So, but he was the one guy in that game that ran and hit and played the way that all 11 should have played.
I think that's a really significant quote from a coordinator to say that's the one
How
guy
often do you hear something like that
played well in this game. Now, maybe if you really sat him down and you're like, hey, here's what you just said, he'd say, well, okay. I thought Kinlaw did some good things.
I'm sure other guys had moments, but he basically said, we had 10 guys, and also Frankie Louvu, who was awesome.
He's at the end of the quote, he circled back. He even doubled down. He said he was the one guy that ran and hit and played. I don't remember how he ended the quote, but something along the lines of how we want to or how we're supposed to.
But he was the one guy in that game that ran and hit and played the way that all 11 should have played.
Ooh.
That means everybody else didn't.
Yeah, that's...
If you hear that, that's about as close as we've gotten with this regime to... And I'm not making this a big negative or anything. This is awesome. I love Joe Witt, and I think he's very honest, and I like his candor. But that's the closest we've gotten to a real challenge from a coach at the podium for a group. To say, hey, I got one of you this week that's not in timeout. The rest of you, not even close to good.
Here's some ice cream for Frankie. Let's see who else gets ice cream. Nobody.
You ever done that with your kids? I have not.
I tried it once.
There's tears. There's a lot that happens, and I think my wife would be upset. But if I was like, all right, Reagan, you get this. Truman, McKinley, Link, no.
Nothing.
Go. It wouldn't go very well.
No.
So that was the first thing that I thought was really interesting about that cut. The second was, though, and this is probably honestly more important because there's a sustainability to this that isn't about one performance that's days removed. Joe Witt, your defensive coordinator, saying that Frankie Louvu's getting a lot more attention, that teams are doing different things to not allow him to make an impact as a pass rusher. Because that was John Keim in that exchange going back and forth there where he said, is he rushing less? And he says, no, that's not a thing. He's rushing more than literally any linebacker in football, which, by the way, was the case just about last year, too. So there's no less opportunities. It's not like they're putting him on the edge infrequently. It's not like they're sending him from off the ball at the second level to get downhill toward the quarterback less often. That's not the case. They are doing that, according to Joe Witt. And I would have to double down and look up the numbers, but he's saying they're doing it more than any other off-ball linebacker in the league. So that's not the issue. It's not a quantity thing. It's not a lack of opportunities as a pass rusher. He's saying he's a marked man. Last year, when he was on his way to 10 sacks before the end of the season, and everyone was taking notice that this guy's an unbelievable pass rusher, and by the way, he finished second team All-Pro, I think some people were surprised because he hadn't played that many snaps in that role to the extent that they did, and he had a career year. So now you come into this season, you turn up the knob on Frankie Louvu rushes, but everyone else is saying, he's not going to beat us.
Yeah.
Where's number four? Okay, we're chipping him. Someone's staying in with him. He's their best pass rusher. And he's given credit to that for Armstrong and some other guys having success. But that was a major moment for me where the alarm sounded a bit, where I go, okay, so Les Louvu is because of the design of the offense. So now someone else has to do something so that Louvu can get back to being Louvu. Otherwise, he's just going to be taken out of games a bunch.
And that was kind of the, what am I looking for here? I always want to know when expectations aren't met. I got this one finger, and I want to point at something. I want to point at a coach, or I want to point at a player, or I want to point at a scheme or a design or the general manager. I need that, just to how I go about my life. I need to know who to be upset with, right? I don't like having frustration and know where to target it. So Louvu hasn't done much through the first handful of weeks. This past week, I thought, was his best game. He was more active the week before, but he finally got his sack, and now he's, you know, okay, now he's not quite on track to what he was doing last year, but still has done more. I'm kind of going, why? Am I upset with Frankie Louvu? Am I upset with, I'm just making this up, with Dan Quinn because he did club DQ this preseason? Nobody's hitting or nobody's working really hard? Who am I mad at? I need to be mad at somebody. And there was my first explanation. That was a nice little clue in going, actually, Frankie Louvu is still doing Frankie Louvu stuff in general, but other teams have decided, okay, not him. He's the most dangerous guy. He's not going to beat us. Someone else has to, and it hasn't happened consistently yet.
All right, the next Joe Witt cut from his press conference today that I thought was really interesting. He talked about the performance against the Falcons, and this was basically while chopping it up on why it was so bad. And he straight up said he thought a lot of guys were kind of playing for themselves in ways that they weren't early in the year. That early in the season, they were doing the team thing, buying in, doing your job, not putting on your cape and trying to be Superman. And it is Witt's take, this is not mine, that it was kind of a selfish performance where, you know, not purposefully, like guys are hunting numbers, but you're trying to do a little too much, you're trying to get a takeaway, you're getting nosy, you're trying to make a play. And he saw a very, very big difference. The reason I think this is so compelling, you and I said something to this effect on Monday, but we're just dudes watching the game. Sometimes we're right, sometimes we're wrong, and we never know exactly what's going on behind the scenes. But when the coordinator, who's leading the meetings, who's watching the tape and grading everybody out, says this, now we've got the answer. And there definitely felt like moments where guys just weren't doing their job and were trying to do somebody else's. And he called them out for that today.
Well, and that goes back to, like I said, the pre and post snap communication and the no capes, okay? So I went back and I showed them the first four plays of the Giants game, okay? And, you know, you had Kinlaw's tackle, you had Payne coming out on the screen. Then the fourth play was they ran fast motion, and you saw Mikey communicating before the snap. You saw Will on the backside communicating and coming out. So pre-snap communication provides great post-snap play. And we didn't have enough of that here. And it seemed like we were playing more as individuals than as a collective unit in the last game. And so we got to get back to playing like we did, communicating like we did. And when we do that, it provides better play for the whole defense.
Oh, wow. Man. How about that?
Yeah.
So he was not mincing words today, I didn't think, with his group. Now, he is generally more candid than Dan Quinn, probably even Kingsbury, if I had to pit them against one another in that regard. But I just thought today was telling. You could tell there were some frustrations after watching that Atlanta tape with how guys played. He actually individually, I didn't pull these cuts because one play days later doesn't matter, but he didn't say names, but he actually went through what happened on the big plays. And he's like, you know, we had a guy who, and you go back and I put it on and I'm like, oh, that's Jeremy Reeves he's talking about.
Uh-huh.
We had a guy do this.
He's trying to punch a fumble out of Bijan Robinson, and the second guy did.
And that's Jeremy Reeves again. Mm-hmm. You know, now Reeves is one of my favorite players on the team. I'm not trying to single him out, nor was Joe Witt necessarily by not saying his name. But his point was, I'll take you through the plays. Here's the little things that happen. And remember, Revo, who's an all-pro special teamer, is in a much bigger role right now, getting to play some safety because you had the injury to Will Harris. You had the injury to Percy Butler. And so you're going down the depth chart. And if communication's a problem, he talked about the Giants game, those first four plays, and he said, you know, you saw Harris talking to Quan. But he's not even out there anymore. I mean, you can't tell me it's not harder to communicate when a bunch of guys who just have way less time together are talking on the back end. If you're blaming, not Danny Ruye, but
if one is
Commanders fan, and I think you're in the club that is as well, so am I. But if you're blaming a lack of time between Jaden and Terry for some of the foibles they've had or the issues they've had getting going on offense for a couple weeks, you know, the three games before the injury, it also stands to reason then you've got to give a little bit on when you lose two safeties and guys are just plugged in like Tyler Owens and Jeremy Reeves, who haven't really played a lot with these corners or coming off the practice squad, or Darnell Savage is out there you signed 4 days ago. You've also got to acknowledge then that it's harder for those guys because they have no time together. Both have to be true, right?
Absolutely. And I think of it this way. Also, I've heard that communication thing. Whenever I hear that, I go, oh, God. It means we're on the slippery slope to bad defense town. We didn't communicate that, or we didn't pass off routes. Whatever the terms are that everybody uses, that secondary communication, it is the time-honored thing. Every Washington fan remembers, you know, one guy pointing, Josh Norman pointing, letting you know that you should have covered him or someone should have done something different. Then the guys go, oh, I thought you were, and I thought I was, and that drives me insane. I don't know. Again, it is to me the hallmark of the bad coach defense when that happens. I don't know if that's the case.
Controllable. That's, I think, why it drives people nuts.
Yeah, if that is the case. Now, who knows if that's the actual explanation? He's just delivering something to us simpletons that we can consume. But when I hear they're not communicating, well then communicate, please. It's an issue for my 12-year-old son's soccer team. They don't communicate all the time. They're surly, almost teenagers. Understandable. They're 12. I need the pros playing defense to communicate the right things to each other.
So I think the misnomer maybe is, I do think a lot of times, I do this too, I dismiss it as like, he's just saying words to get through the press conference. But I think in this case with defense, if you're not passing things off correctly in the secondary, it probably was a communicational issue. But I don't think, Danny, it means that guys weren't talking. They might not have seen something the same way. That might be what it means.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they may not
totally have possible.
Guessed right. I mean, offenses are trying to put you in a bind, right? So, like, one particular play that he referenced was that opening third down of the game, and I hate to go through the specifics all these days later, doesn't really matter, but basically it was a deep ball. I think Drake Leonard, somebody caught a ball in the seam. It was like a 20-plus yard gain on a 3rd and 7. And Reeves comes downhill to, like, play in the area in the zone where Luvu's playing. If he just stays deeper at safety, you've got that covered. Penix has nowhere to throw, and either the pressure gets home or he has to throw a ball into a small window that maybe gets broken up. Instead, it's a wide-open catch-and-run completion. Might have even been Pitts down the field. I don't remember who the opening third down catch went to. But that is a communicational issue. I don't think it's that before the snap, nobody talked to each other. I don't think that's what he's saying. All they have to do is speak. I think it's they guessed wrong or had the wrong thing on, or Reeves thought somebody was doing one thing, and they did another, and he did something else, and it's super complicated. You know, you could call a coverage that's not that complicated, but the route concepts and who's where and where you're going, you got to get on the same page. And sometimes on the road, in a dome, with volume, and there was a lot of it because a lot of people were cheering for the Commanders to get off the field on third down because it was kind of a 50-50 crowd. Let's go to cut three here. He thinks that players are listening too much to the noise. We were just talking about Ben McDonald and online, social media. He thinks that his young guys care way too much what people think. I found this pretty intriguing.
In this society and how things are now, and the guys, especially these guys that grew up in different than when we grew up, where they're in the social media and they read everything that everybody writes, it weighs on them. You know, when you're, you know, my age, 47, or when you didn't grow up in that environment, I don't look. So whatever people are saying about me, that's cool. I don't care because I don't see it, you know. But they really look at it and it weighs on them. And so then they start to try to overtry. So that's one thing Q and I have talked about. How do we not just the defense, but these young men in general, how do you keep them, you know, grounded from the standpoint of blocking out the noise, because good or bad is not real, you know? And so, and it's people that, that don't know the individuals or what's going on in some sport, in spots. And so that's what we got to do, is block out the noise and go play well. I've told players before, if you want people to say positive things, play positive. If I want to have people say positive things about me, I need to put a positive product out on the field. So hopefully that answers your question from that standpoint.
I love that, because this was not just a coach basically like, shame on you guys for saying negative things. That was not what he was saying.
Right.
You heard him at the end say, you should be. If we want nice things said about us, we got to play a lot better. Now, if I want people to like me as a defensive coordinator, the defense has to be really good. And he says he's telling players that. So I love that part of it. There was also a great line in there where he said, good or bad, it's not real. I love that.
That is perfect. Because that's true. That's so correct.
That is life advice for all of us.
Uh-huh.
I mean, Twitter's not real. Like, good or bad, it's not real. But that is, it's not something I think about very often, but it's got to be one of the huge challenges of coaching in the league today. Because there's no doubt in my mind that all of these guys are on social media and they're reading their press clippings, positive and negative, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're probably riding a roller coaster that you didn't used to. When the internet didn't exist, you had no idea what people thought about you. You know what I'm
You'd
saying?
You'd find out like 2 days later when the paper came and there was a column.
Maybe.
With one quote from one guy.
But there wasn't even a columnist paying that much attention.
Right.
At a certain time. And the world has changed. So I think that that's true. Now, here's where I struggle a little bit. Take me from there to the defense being really bad. Draw that link. And I think what he ends up talking about is they're trying to do a little too much. You hear people are chirping about how you're playing. You want to be the guy to get the pick so everyone shuts up, and now you're out of position or whatever. That's a little bit of a lily pad leap that I can't follow you on. But I do think it's a reality as a coach that you have to deal with, that guys lose confidence or are overconfident or ride this emotional roller coaster based on, you know, the media and the fans and some of those things.
Yeah, I bet you Eagles fans tweet sometimes. You know what I mean? They're pretty good. I bet you a Bills fan has had something to say at some point.
Which is what he's saying at the end of that.
Yeah.
They'll be more positive than they should be as soon as you play well in a win. And I think collectively, I'll say the we in town, so everybody that doesn't play on the team, coach for the team, after the Giants game, I remember doing the topic at Pupatella, like, is this a defense that could finish in the top 10 or 15 in the NFL? Where do we think they finished the year? Like, there were very positive signs
there. People were bullish after that one, yeah.
There have been two games where they've kicked an offense's butt where you go, this defense might actually be solid. And then there's been two where they have been a disaster. And on this show, we try not to ride the roller coaster, but we've basically got a year-plus sample of some major flaws in the secondary, I would say, that don't seem to be getting cleaned up. Last thing here, along the lines of trying too hard to make plays, he talks about hunting turnovers and that having maybe been a problem after three games without one. He saw them trying to get three or four in a game, right? And that's where you play really bad football.
You know, guys want to make plays, you know, and guys are just trying to get the turnovers and trying to do this and that, where the turnovers are going to come, okay? The way that we've played the run, because we played it as a unit, I'm happy with that, okay? What I'm not happy with are the explosive passes, right? If we can clean up those explosive passes without getting turnovers, we clean up the explosive passes, we're playing a solid brand of football, okay? Now, if we clean up the explosive passes and get the turnovers, now we're playing a dominant style. But right now we're playing a sloppy style, because it's, you know, stop it on first down, stop it, and here goes an explosive, right? Which just is not good. And we have to clean it up, and we will clean it up. I have full confidence in the staff and the players that it will get handled and it'll get started this week.
Through four games last year, Washington only had two takeaways. This year they've only got one.
They got less. Yeah, I think that's a correct assessment, by the way. Not just what you said about the numbers, 2-1. It's good math. But I'm talking about Joe Witt. There's a clear desperation to force one, right? So guys are instead of tackling, wrapping up, and the second guy comes in to punch the football away, or, you know, you got a chance even in a regular tackle to maybe reach for the ball to try to make it more complicated. It's now there's a, we got to get one. We have none at this point. You know, it's like
it's like a guy who hasn't hit a home run all year.
Yeah, squeezing the sawdust out of the bat.
A hockey player. Everybody okay? I'm mentioning hockey. We're fine,
it's
right?
It's pro hockey, so nobody complain.
Ben McDonald's not going to be angry, I don't think.
You're going to be all right. They're still going to telecast it.
It's like Pierre-Luc Dubois 22 games in last year where he hasn't gotten a goal yet.
And every question is, when are you going to score?
And it's like, dude, I should have had 11 by now. I'm snake bitten. But then you start over trying it, and yeah, you start grinding the stick down a little bit in your hands. Let's go around the NFC East next. Are the three other teams in the division better, worse, or exactly what we thought they would be at this point, a quarter way through the year? You're listening to Grant and Danny on The Fan.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The NFC East, to this point, led by the Philadelphia Eagles, not a surprise. The Giants are pulling up the rear, also exactly what was anticipated. And the fact that Washington's 2 and Dallas is 3, this has been chalk, nothing to see here. But have the other three teams been better, worse, or about exactly what we thought they would be? Let's get into that on Grant and Danny as we welcome you back on The Fan. Let's start at the top of the division with the 4-0 Eagles, who have played just one division game. It was week one against Dallas. They won. They're 3-0 in the NFC. They probably got the best resume. And I don't just mean record, but resume in the league right now, because they've beaten good teams. Kansas City, the Rams, and the Buccaneers in the last 3 weeks. Has Philly been better, worse, or exactly what you thought?
I have pretty high expectations for them, so I'll say exactly what I thought. Winning a game or two that they shouldn't. You know what I mean? Coming back from so many points down against the Rams, that's not sustainable. You block two field goals on consecutive possessions to win a game, not sustainable. But this is who they are. They are in some of these games. They're among the most talented teams in the league. They haven't really clicked on all cylinders yet. A.J. Brown's got, you know, wide receiver 7 type numbers at this point. You know he's capable of doing an awful lot. Barkley hasn't really gotten going. And yet, they've got 3 quality wins on their resume, plus a divisional one. So that's kind of what I expected from them. Maybe win a few games that they shouldn't, but there's a winning pedigree there.
They have looked like I thought they would look. Remember, I predicted a regression for the Eagles. Mm-hmm. I didn't think it would be enough that Washington was going to catch them or win the division. I still had the Eagles winning the NFC East, but I thought it was going to be like an 11-6, 12-5 at best kind of division championship for them. And I still think that's possible. But the way they've played is about what I thought. Their record's been better than I thought. I thought right now, this moment, they'd be 3-1. If you told me they'd either be 4-0 or 2-2 through these games, especially after watching them open against the Cowboys playing like they did, I would have said, oh, well, they're going to be 2-2, I guess. But at 4-0, I'm going to give them better than anticipated, because what they still do, and they've done it since last year, they did it the entire second half of last year when Hurts was on the field, it doesn't really matter how they play, how they move the ball, whether their defense has a good game or a bad game. They just, in the end of the game, mm-hmm. they win. It's the Chiefs, man. It's the NFC version of it. Not coincidentally, 2 teams that have played in the Super Bowl 2 of the last 3 years. So I'll say better. Let's go to Dallas. The Cowboys, this is weird because ties are weird and ruin everything. But their record right now, I've got to say, 1-2-1 through 4 games. Have the Cowboys been better, worse, or what you thought they'd be?
Better. And they've got a stinker in there. That game against Chicago, I thought I'd go, okay, here we go. That's them. They finally showed up. They're going to end their tailspin. They're chaos. Brian Schottenheimer's a boob. Should never have been hired. Jerry Jones messed everything up. That's their stinker. They played terribly in that game. I can't defend that. But to rebound the way that they did, and they played really well against Green Bay, like really well. It was their pass rush at times that was harassing the quarterback, you know, even without Micah Parsons. Offensively, they're a pain in the butt. They've scored 40 in 2 separate games. They gave the Eagles all they can handle. I thought this would be a tailspin kind of year with an overmatched boob as a head coach. I got to say, I'm wrong about it at this point. I thought they'd be pushovers. Now, maybe not for Washington, divisional game. And, you know, they despite not being very good last year, they gave Washington all they can handle twice. But I thought they'd be terrible. They're not. I think they win this weekend to get to 2-2-1 when they play the Jets.
They've been worse than I thought they were going to be. It would be recency effect for me to say otherwise. I loved the performance against Green Bay. I came on the air on Monday, and I basically gave credit to Brian Schottenheimer and the offense because they have exceeded my expectations, especially post the CeeDee Lamb injury. But this defense is so much worse than I thought. I thought they'd be bad. I didn't think they'd be record-breakingly bad, which is where we're trending in some ways this season. I didn't think they wouldn't be able to get a stop. I didn't think that you'd go for 325-3 if you played the Cowboys. You got to win MVP if you did it 17 times. Like, this is really, really ugly. They also got eviscerated by the Bears. Chicago is interesting offensively. They're going to provide some problems with that scheme, but they shouldn't be beating teams by 17 right now. They haven't done that to anybody else. They're middling. They're 500. You know, they just snuck out a one-point win against the Raiders as an example. To beat Dallas 31-14, that one was just a couple of games ago. So through four, you've got a win. They're worse than I thought they would be right now. And lastly, the Giants. I guess I can go first here. I think the Giants have actually been better than anticipated. I was not big on... You and I both said they were going to surpass the national expectation because everyone seemed to think they were going to be a top five pick. You know, that they were going to be one of the worst teams in the NFL. I did not see that. I thought their defensive talent was too good, and I like some of their skill guys. It's going to get ugly here at the receiver position without Malik Nabers. But I was not big on them as like a wild card hopeful, which is what some of the people doing that everyone's sleeping on the Giants were acting like. But yes, they lose to Dallas. That was an overtime game, 40-37. They easily could have won. A couple of things at the end of that game, Russell Wilson went badly, or else they're 2-2 right now. With losses to Washington in week one, where they scored 6 points. That was a bad game. And then the Chiefs. And they played the Chiefs really, really close. Also, Jackson Dart, both in the preseason and in this first game, wasn't great. They didn't do anything numbers-wise offensively. The stats were bad. But he looks more capable, more competent, more confident than I thought. The arrow is way up on him for me. I was not a huge fan of his coming out in the draft. I actually think he could be legit good. So I feel better about the Giants right now at 1-3 than I did coming into the season, oddly enough.
So even though they're coming off a win, their most impressive game of the season, I feel worse about them because I was one of those people that said, not wild card, I didn't think they were there, but I thought that would be a far more competitive team than everybody else thought. Everyone just kind of considers them because they've been bad for a couple years.
But they're an overtime loss away from 2-2 right now.
They got the second worst point differential in the NFC. And they are going to, again, have a great chance to get a win to go to 2-3 this weekend at New Orleans, who is probably the worst team maybe in all of football, but certainly in the NFC. But I thought they'd be a lot better than they were. They were non-competitive against Washington, non-competitive against Kansas City, and now they've made the quarterback change, so there's no more Russell Wilson throwing it out of bounds on a fourth and goal to go in a must-have situation. So, you know, maybe the arrow's trending up. Again, it has to be after a win. But I thought this would be a pain in the butt to play. I thought they would treat every game kind of like that Dallas one where maybe you get them, but it's going to be a rock fight, like that old 6-10 Gibbs, then Redskins team that they weren't very good, but man, it wasn't fun to come to town. I've been disappointed in how they've been. Again, I know it's weird to say after they come off of a W.
We saw that Chiefs game differently, if that was non-competitive to you. That was a tied game going into the half. And then they were down 16-9 with 7 minutes left in the game, a one-possession game. I thought they played Kansas City pretty well, and it was basically like a, oh my God, if they had anyone who could do anything at quarterback, they could win this football game. And that was, I know the Chiefs got their first win, they were 0-2, but I mean, that was a Kansas City team where the arrow was trending up a little bit, and that game got put on ice with 6 minutes and 5 seconds left on a Kareem Hunt touchdown. That was pretty close. I mean, so it's an overtime loss, that loss. I do agree with you when you're talking about the Commanders game. Like, going back to week one, that was ugly, especially offensively for them. But I want to see how this Jackson Dart thing unfolds. They get the Saints this weekend. I think New Orleans is favored in this game, by the way, by like a point at home. Have you seen that?
Yeah, let me check that.
We've got our confidence points picks coming up. I'm thinking about actually rolling with the Giants, catching a point and a half or something like that. But New Orleans, I believe, when I saw it this week, was a home favorite.
1.5 point favorites at home.
It's one of those that smells funny and you normally just run from because they know something you don't.
So is there like a test that you do for that if it smells?
Here's my only... That's funny.
Thank you.
My only guess as to what that's about. Young quarterbacks in the Superdome have a really, really hard time. There's a lot of people. It's very loud. But is this still that? I mean, is this that Superdome?
Do you feel like it's going to be that Superdome?
This isn't the building Robert Griffin went into in 2012. You know what I'm saying? Like,
there's no Drew Brees chance pregame. Yeah, I don't know.
I think we're probably okay now to go to the Superdome. And you're just playing indoors on carpet in a fairly quiet place, right?
You got a guy that played in the SEC also. It's like, again, it's not like he didn't go to loud, raucous stadiums where people didn't like him.
Beltway Blitz coming up is about 20 minutes from right now. And we're going to give away those Caps tickets. We've got two of them. Opening night against the Bruins is 6 days away. If you want to be there, you've got to be listening to The Fan. Next, our double play. Something terrible happened to Ryan today. A fear of everybody listening. And it happened to him. That's next.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
You want those Caps tickets to opening night next week? You better be listening in 15 minutes to Grant and Danny here on The Fan. It is time for our double play driven by your local Washington area Honda dealers. Now's the time for a great deal on a new Honda. Visit your local Washington area Honda dealer today. So Ryan came into the studio, shot out of a cannon today before the program, hot under the collar, said something terrible had happened to him. He needed some double play time. We're able to figure out what it is, but we don't really have any details.
We don't know much. We made sure it was something that was appropriate to air.
Yes.
And so once we did that, it was like,
I kind of had to vet him a little bit.
Yeah.
I think Clary's been around long enough that I trust some of his judgment, but I still
yep.
No, I still need a little bit of intel here. I can't just fly blind here. I got four kids. They need to eat food every single night. This job's pretty good. But he told us he got stuck in an elevator. That's what he wants to talk about. One of everybody's greatest fears, I would say.
It's on my list.
So without further ado, do we have Ryan Clary's theme music? I think we should stick with his theme music and not him trying to get the attention of the new team president by calling him the wrong name.
Hey, Paul.
So without further ado, Paul, you are good to go.
Hey, Ryan. This was a bad day. This was something that, quite frankly, has been my greatest fear, getting stuck in an elevator, and it happened today. So I live on the fourth floor of my apartment building, and I was going down to G2, which is about six floors down.
Which, by the way, I feel like we hear some type of horror story about your apartment building.
Yeah.
Once every 2 weeks.
Yep.
When is your lease up?
It's a great question. It's a great question.
Will you be leaving?
I would like to.
Okay.
I would like to.
Doesn't it sound like he's got a shebangus?
All the time.
Yeah. All the time.
Because on paper, everything sounds great. It's this luxury, this, that, and the other, and all the amenities, but like something never works. This thing never... It's like the ice cream
garage
machine at McDonald's
door
here and
collapses
there.
In the middle of the day.
It's a great place if you never have to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It's a great place. It's terrible. So, I was stuck in the elevator today. So I get on the fourth floor, go down to G2, and right around the second level, we stop off. We have someone get picked up in there. Okay, it's a bigger guy, and it's fine. Like, I'm like, oh, we're just going down to G2 together.
Is it just you and him?
Just me and him. And this elevator is a small elevator.
Okay, so you get on in the fourth floor.
Yep.
He gets on at what floor?
About the second floor.
Okay, and you got four more floors to go.
Yep, we got four more floors.
When you say bigger guy, give me a feel on this.
Because
you're skinny now. So
yeah, what
like,
position would he play on the offense?
We're talking 400 plus pounds, 6 foot. He's a big guy.
400?
400. Okay. This is a big guy.
So this is like, you seen Remember the Titans?
I've seen.
Louis
exactly.
Lastic.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
So he's playing offensive line.
And yeah, so
he's not moving that well.
He's not moving that well. And so he gets on the second floor, and then we start going down. Then all of a sudden, you hear like a big, just kind of like bang. That's all we hear. And then the elevator stops, and then the lights go out. No joke.
Oh.
The lights go out. I don't know where we are. I don't know this person with me. This is like a 6x6 box in
that
elevator.
It's an M. Night Shyamalan movie, dude.
This is terrible.
This is awful.
Does he look shady or does he look friendly?
He looks friendly, but here's where it gets
When the lights were on, he looked friendly.
Exactly. Here's where it gets weird. This guy freaks out.
Oh, so it was me.
This guy freaks out. First thing he
you
does.
You mean the guy who was in an elevator that just slammed the ground and the lights are out?
Yes.
He was a little bit upset about that.
And you guys know me. I am not a calm person. My emotions will show. I was freaking out, but I was keeping it inside because I'm watching this guy lose his mind
but
in
how,
this
could
elevator.
You see him or is it pitch black?
No. So there's an emergency light. So it's like just... You could barely see him. You could barely make out the
figure. It's like that
there.
Orange glow kind
yes.
of light.
If he was coming over to attack you, you would know it before he touched you.
Yes, I would be able to see that.
But was he keeping his distance?
No. So here's where it gets just really weird. He starts panicking, freaking out. As one would, it's like, hey, we're
describe that. What is that? Vulnerable? Is that?
Just so many bad words. He was saying, I don't have my bleeping phone on me. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? What are we going to do? Like pacing back and forth in this 6x6 box. I'm in there and I'm like, okay, like we're good. I have my phone on me. Like, let's call the leasing office. Let's get someone here. And so I call the leasing office.
So you stayed calm.
I was shaking.
That's the corporate experience. Calm, clear.
No, it's really not. I was really surprised. But I think this guy, I think I was so mad at him in the moment for just freaking out that I had to stay calm.
Oh, you can't be mad at that guy.
That
is a sum of all fears moment.
So
I'm going to tag you back in a second. Danny, this would be my nightmare.
Yep.
I think about this all the time now. I told Clary this a few minutes ago. I went through a many-year period where, while I've never not gotten in elevators, it was always on my mind. Where I'm like, I'm getting in, and I'm like, all right, please, God, get me where I need to go here. Like, you shouldn't even think about it. It should just be, I'm on, I'm off, it's over. For some reason, over the last couple of months, especially with my kids at some of these rinky-dink elevators you take at movie theaters or, you know, wherever, strollers and stuff, now you're taking these, like, just nubby elevators, I think about it constantly. I'm like, what? Okay, if this thing stops, what am I doing? There's the button. Before I let the door close, I'm making sure we got a fire button and this and that. I got my cell phone. So this is my worst nightmare. I am just hearing this gives me all of the anxiety. All right, go back. Go for it.
Well, here's what will give myself and anybody out there more anxiety. Imagine that anxiety on top of watching someone have a panic attack in front of you in which you could barely see him. This guy is losing his mind as I am talking to the leasing office. I'm talking pretty calmly to the leasing manager there, and she's like, weirdly enough, she said, oh yeah, this has happened before. Like, we'll be able to get you out in the next 10 minutes. I'm like, okay. And he is yelling into my ear, into my phone, saying, you have to get us out. What is it? What are you going to come? When are you going to come?
How old is this guy?
30s. Like, this is an older gentleman. Like, this is someone
That's
who
tough.
Should not
called,
be
called
freaking
an older
out.
Gentleman, by the
and
way.
Again, and so to the point where it's like, listen, we are in this together. We are on an island. We are surviving together. He's a bad teammate. I got to put him in his place. I tell the guy to shut up. I'm like, dude, you got to shut up, man. He's freaking out. He's making me freak out. You are in a dark room with a stranger.
You couldn't have said like, hey, man, I get what's happening. Let's calm down a little bit.
Guy, we're surviving. You know, I don't have time to be like, hey, man, that's a gator. You're going to get eaten by that gator. The gator's going to eat you, man. I don't have time for that. I don't have time to explain
it. I don't like adding to the panic attack.
Which you told him to shut up. How do you take it?
Well, because I was panicking. He was just kind of like, no, man, we got to know when we're getting out of here. And I'm like,
I'm with him, by the way.
Which I agree with.
Yeah, but Ryan's trying to work on it.
I'm just interrupting the guy's work on it.
I agree. But so what I would do in that situation is I'm like, hey, man, I got this.
Guy.
We're going to be okay. You got to turn into basically like
the hostage negotiator.
Yeah, but you're the person that answers the call on the switchboard. Like, hey, we've got people on the way. Stay under your bed. He's going to leave. Don't worry. Like, that's what you got to be doing right now.
Guy, it's easy to say. It's easy to say.
I agree. That's true. That's true.
And you also have this guy in a 6x6 box losing his mind because it gets worse. He starts banging on the elevator doors.
All right.
Pitch black room.
I'm
losing his mind. And I am, at this point, sitting on the ground, waiting for the leasing office. I am on the phone with them. Like, nothing is working. I can barely see anything. And all you hear is like a... like him against the elevator door, banging constantly, yelling, help, help. And I'm like, well, I'm about
to help.
Help.
That is tough.
He is losing it. And I get it. But also, I'm in this, man. We're a team. Like,
you're not a very good team.
What
with you telling him to shut up and him just screaming in your ear?
Him screaming help. Oh, no.
I would try to rip the doors open. That would be my first thing. I think I would be like 80% of what this guy is, to be honest. Minus maybe the attacking you with my words. Everything else, I think I'd be this guy.
Did he go full Dwight Schrute and try to establish a pee corner early? Because no, he knew he was going to be there for a long time?
Did he take off his shirt?
No, not. That would have been a great bit. Here's actually funny. I actually did eat my granola bar in there because I didn't know what else to do.
So you're way too calm.
No.
If you're able to eat in there, like this should be a high anxiety.
I'm a stress eater. That's the thing. I'm a stress eater. So this is one of those moments where I just learned something about me. Like, if you're going to leave me on an island.
So what was he doing? How long were you guys in there?
10 minutes. A good 10 minutes.
And how did they get you out?
So it turned out the leasing office, again, has somehow, some way done this before. And they were able to, like, pull the doors open from their end.
Did Jim get the crowbar?
They had a crowbar. And I don't know.
And does it open to a ground level, or where are you?
Yeah, like, we were, like, 2 feet above ground level there. So it's like you had to take a little step down there, and then we were gone. And I'll never see that guy again, most likely. It's a pretty big building. But that guy...
How was he when they opened the doors? Like, what was his general demeanor?
I bet you got out first.
First off, he sure as hell did. He got out so quickly, and he was dripping in sweat, which I get. I had to go up and change my clothes. Like, I was sweating my butt off.
You sleep a little bit on how much you're going to sweat as a big guy, how tough the tight space thing is when you're giant. Like, all of these things he's dealing with. I mean, what a horrible situation.
Horrible.
Now, you're awful. Also in it, but, you know, you're skinny, you're eating your granola bar, you probably, like, sat down pretzel style and set your fantasy lineup. You were just happy to be
not.
There.
No, I was not happy to be there. It was awful. This is legit. Like, when I say this, you will not catch me on an elevator in a long time. If I have to walk up to the 20th floor, I'll walk up to the 20th. I will not get in an elevator for a very long time. After dealing with that, especially if there are people in there, because that is the part where I think now people do not realize.
You're not going to take an elevator up to the top of this building if you gotta
walk up there.
It's a good thing Darius didn't get stuck in an elevator.
that's a great thing. But I think right now with the way, like, people are afraid of getting stuck in elevators, you should be. But here's what you should be more afraid of. With people. Because you do not know how they're going to react.
Clary,
and he did not react well.
It's all I think about. At Nats Park, every time, and Toby's in the elevator with me at Nats Park all the time, going up to the press box.
Tough one.
So I always do bits, first of all. There's a lot of bits. Sometimes Toby's uncomfortable. Sometimes I think he enjoys them. But the first thing I do before all those bits, Toby, is I always go, all right, if I get stuck, who's going to be the guy that I got to worry about in here? I mean, I'm literally thinking about
this. In your mind, yeah.
Every time. Like, who is the guy that's going to be a gigantic pain in the tuchus? We've had some fun elevator rides.
Yeah, I mean, usually you're pulling elevator attendant, like, third floor, everybody, gallery level, third floor, anybody getting off here? Just trying to help traffic. Yeah. I don't mind those bits. Some other bits are a little odd, but, you know.
Danny would hate the other ones. Just overly conversational.
Where are you coming in from? How is the first game at all?
Oh, like the one guy bumped into, and you're like, oh, man, who let him know about us?
Yeah, that was good. No, so this was actually a good one. So this guy, like, older guy and his wife. This guy keeps coming backwards, backwards, backwards. So I'm literally back to the back of the elevator.
Uh-huh.
And he comes to the point where, like, is basically, like, just about butt to, you know,
sure,
what.
Sure, yeah.
And he's, like, 2 inches away, and his wife's like, "Hun, hun, you're backing right into him." And he, like, turned around, and he's like, "Oh, ugh, sorry." And I, like, kind of grab him by the shoulders. I'm like, "You haven't told her about us?" Just like that.
Oh, my God. To a stranger?
Yeah. Toby loved it.
Give me the sweating panicked guy over that.
Hey, they played along well. So
they loved it.
Went well.
As long as people like the bit, it goes swimmingly. It goes great. Every now and then you get someone that doesn't.
Yeah.
Now we got an awkward ride.
Now we're in the elevator.
Sorry that happened to you, Rhino.
That
sounds
stinks.
Like you were the hero of the day, though. You worked the phones. You got it done. We're giving away Caps tickets next on Grant and Danny.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.